Hello, and welcome to the Go Dark podcast, brought to you by Go Dark Investigations, a division of Campbell Paranormal Investigations located in Michigan. CPI was founded by Beth and Sean Campbell in 2005. Our Go Dark Investigations branch was formed in 2011. We provide free and professional paranormal investigations for homes, businesses, or historical sites. For contact information, questions, or to learn more about Campbell Paranormal or Go Dark Investigations, please visit our website at www.campbellpi.org. Hello, and welcome to the Go Dark podcast. I am your host, Brad Pitt.
And I'm your co-host, Jennifer Aniston.
Wow, hey.
Not bad, huh?
Not bad. You got a little bit less hair than Jennifer
Really?
Aniston,
do we have to go there right
but
away?
But you're better looking.
I appreciate that. Nicer breath.
So here we are again. So how's your work week been and your week been, sweetie?
You know, I'm in the quality department. I'm the quality director, and production takes a crap and quality wipes.
Speaking of taking a crap.
Oh yeah. That wasn't even planned.
I know. It's horrible. I know. It's pretty sad that most of my conversational elements somehow fall into pooping. But as you know, I've experienced a little bit of intestinal discomfort this past mm-hmm. week that I'm at a loss as to how to explain its
right.
origin. But I think I believe today that I may have honed in on a likely candidate, and that would be the switching out of the coffee at our work break room. Because we were doing the wonderful Maxwell House, which I love. I even like it better than the Keurig that we use. The stuff
really?
That we, oh, yeah. You know, it's just mild, and it's just got a good flavor.
Okay.
And then suddenly, the beginning of this week, there are these big, like, brick-sized packets of the Arabica beans, and I'm finding a correlation between having my coffee and then, because depending on when I have my coffee, a certain amount of time later, I start with the gurgling.
A little shock and awe.
A little shock and awe.
Sure.
Followed by the Civil War battle in the bathroom. So, speaking of bathrooms, we will return to the bathroom.
I'm sure at some point we'll bring it full circle.
Absolutely. So, we thought today we would... I think at least maybe two of our three podcast listeners may be newbies, rookies, you know, greenhorns, a little bit new to the business. So, and obviously we remember how tough it was. And we still, every investigation, we have a lot of lessons learned.
But
we certainly understand, you know, that it takes a while to get your feet wet and you learn things every time. So we're providing this podcast as a public service message to maybe help out some of those people that are just starting out, just some things to look out for.
Well, and unlike previous podcasts we've done where we just kind of speak about general terms of equipment, we're going to try to walk this through based on our recent investigation.
Exactly, so, which may change next week the next investigation, because
that's how we roll. We're fluid.
We're fluid and flexible, absolutely. So I think I mentioned last time that we have a new division of Campbell Paranormals, which is the Go Dark Investigations, named after our podcast as well. And this is where we're going to kind of be focusing more on non-residential, non-client-based investigations, historical places, commercial sites, etc. And we are actually kind of weaning ourselves out of the residential business to some extent. We still obviously will take cases where there is extreme situations and you know, with children, etc., but we have some reasons for doing that.
Well, I mean, the services as we present them now aren't quite the same as when what they needed 8 years ago. People
right.
just understand things more.
Now, this was all when we started, it was pre-taps.
Yes.
Pre-anything,
really.
Pick your top 100 ghost hunting shows.
You'd read some fringe books that you usually had to dig deep for in
Troy
Amazon.
Troy Taylor,
yeah. And kind of wing it, but clients are beyond that.
Yeah, they're much more savvy nowadays, and we've actually had a lot of cases where the clients have already done some sort, on some level, some mini investigation, and typically, not always, but a lot of times what they're really looking for is, I want information on what's here. I know I have something. You can't dispute that. I know I have it.
Right.
I want to know what it is, and I want to get rid of it.
Yeah, and obviously we have people we could reference, but we don't get rid of ghosts. And if the client isn't interested in trying to gather evidence and they believe no matter what we tell them that there's a ghost there, You know, you can wrap up a lot of time and energy for something that that doesn't mean anything.
Absolutely.
So.
And in fact, we've had, now most of our clients have been great, and we've had great relationships. Mm-hmm. So we've had a few that have even been resistant to our debunking of, some things that we thought, you know, and we never present them as, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt this is what you experienced. We always present as, here's a very viable or reasonable alternative.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, which we've talked about before, we've provided two or three
yes.
viable alternatives, and we've met with some resistance. So it's just a different mindset.
Well, let's face it. If you're having a good time, for whatever reason, you're accepting of your ghost, whatever that ghost may be, maybe it's a great story for your visitors that come and see. Maybe you love telling people about it at family reunions, and it's not real cool when people come in with equipment and say, no, that might actually have been this tree scraping against your window or whatever.
I think you're being very kind in the situations that I know we're referring to. They're a little bit beyond, oh, it's just something to talk about at the family reunion. It's more like, you know, psychological stuff. But
whack jobs?
Well,
not necessarily.
That's your terminology.
Well, some people.
Be respectful.
None
that.
Of our clients, per se. I'm
exactly,
just saying out
exactly.
there somewhere.
Somewhere, hypothetically,
so, exactly.
theoretically. So we do have exceptions, and we actually had an investigation for a nice couple a couple weeks ago that were the exception to the rule, and it was actually kind of refreshing to have a couple, a family that wanted us to come in and actually do an investigation, get evidence, and
not
get rid of it.
Not get rid of it.
Right. So we're going to kind of walk through a typical investigation, and we're going to use this one as an example. And, this is kind of what we do on a normal basis.
Mm-hmm.
So typically we'll arrive at the site somewhere in the evening. We usually give ourselves, about an hour to set up?
Sure. Now, let me back it up just for a
Absolutely.
Second, because we usually try to do, when we can, if they're local enough, we try to do one. You and I try to go on site for kind of a pre-interview.
Oh,
kinda,
yeah, we do.
Kind of
yeah.
get a feel of the place. I usually take
oh,
the
you're going way back.
Well, just to kind of understand.
No.
Try to get a little bit of a baseline with a Gauss meter.
Bring me in, honey. You
yeah,
reel me
exactly.
in. I want to get right in there.
Beth
but, you
does
know.
A wonderful, charming job of kind of interviewing the clients and kind of getting a feel for them. It's a role that I don't play very well because
That's not true.
And so
we do a home visit, and typically I'll mm-hmm. sit down and ask some questions, usually with the recorder running because it's just easier than typing. We do it on the phone sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we're doing an on-site visit, Sean will usually, you'll usually walk around and do
yeah,
a baseline.
Yeah, you should try to do a baseline before any investigation anyway. And if we can get that out of the way during the pre-investigation, it just saves a little time. And plus, we can give a scouting report to our team when we actually hit the site.
Right, and you can also sometimes find out things while you're
oh,
doing
yeah,
the,
yeah,
the,
absolutely.
The scoping. So we go through the interview, and then we discuss with the client if they're still interested in an investigation. And as far as we go, we typically tell them, depending on the size of the house, it's usually, 3-4 hours more if we get, hot on something or if there's a lot of activity. We, kind of explain the whole process. And then one of the things that we try to tell people is, limit the number of people at the house, and that doesn't always work out. But so we show up.
It's
usually,
gotten better.
It has. It has. This
it
last
has
one was
better.
Great
yeah,
because
exactly.
it was a completely clear house, and
yep.
they actually had enough trust in us to,
yep.
to go out and go hit a movie, which was great because
exactly.
it's nice. It's really difficult to, I don't know if I would turn my house over to complete strangers.
I would be unprepared to do so.
Right, exactly. I would. Why I don't typically invite complete strangers in because I'm embarrassed of how.
Yeah, we live comfortably sometimes. So
I like that. That's a nice way to put it. We do live comfortably within a lot of pet hair. But
yeah.
So we arrive about an hour, and then typically I think you pretty much do most of the setup, don't you? You and
yeah, in this particular case, right. In this particular case, of course, Kirk introduced his quad DVR. It's the first time we got, and
yes,
which
was
a wonderful opportunity to
implement
your idea on a CFC, which we'll definitely have to use in
a
future.
CFC.
That's a aerospace sir.
Okay, for those of CNC. For our non-aerospace.
Yeah, yeah.
Command Central.
Right, Command Central.
I prefer the Nexus.
The Nexus. That's
yeah.
a good. That's not bad at all. We. It's also good when we do our pre-interview if we know where some of the hot spots are, because then
right.
that's where we tend to set up our cameras, our DigiBlues. I have gotten into the habit the last couple of investigations, and I think I'm going to keep doing that, where I take my digital recorder, and especially if we know there's one hot spot in particular, I turn it on and date stamp it time or time stamp it and let it run all night regardless.
Which,
we may break that up a little bit, but it never leaves the site.
Which we did in this case as well. We put it in one of the rooms that, or actually the room that had the most activity or the most intense activity reported.
This also gives Alana a chance, again, to maybe use some of her theory. Is a grad school student in psychology, she gets to talk a little bit to the clients as well.
Alana does a very good job of following up on, you know, she'll get the set of interview questions and the responses, and then she goes through and formulates not only some areas to debunk, but then some follow-up questions, and mm-hmm. typically that's what she's been doing is asking the, while we're doing the setup, asking the clients
yeah.
some questions.
And we're even finding that some, I think we commented on it earlier this week as we were reviewing her notes from the investigation, she presents those observations really in a very clinical way.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
So
once she gets her, she goes through her schooling, she's going to be a great psychologist. So Alana typically will go through and follow up with the client and make some notes. And then we have Becky. Now, Becky typically comes into, we've talked about Becky before. Becky is our self-proclaimed sensitive,
the rookie,
and a great scientific
AKA.
Investigator. And Becky typically comes in with no information at all. I don't even give her the address most of the time.
She no preconceptions.
No, she just has no idea what the reports are. And so Becky just kind of does her walking around, you know, just kind of getting a feel for the place. And then we kind of, and she's usually pretty quiet. We don't really have a whole lot of interaction while we're setting up, but then she does help with the setup as well. And I just sit around and look pretty.
And you do that remarkably well.
Actually, no, I'm usually following up with the clients and,
exactly.
and kind of helping to coordinate stuff. So we get everything set up. We have the Nexus or the Command Central. And typical is what many people have seen on the TV shows. We have, you know, one or two people monitor. Now, this is actually the first time that we've done a little bit of a semi-command central before, but this is the first time that we did a very formal, because we had the quad DVR, so we were monitoring, you know, we had the walkies because it was a bigger place, which a lot of times we don't need because it's a small house. And I thought it worked really well where if they heard things that they couldn't explain, they walkied in and I made some notes. I was working on the report as people were, you know, experiencing things, which I think made it a little bit easier in the long run. But it's just good to track all that stuff as it's happening.
Quick lessons learned on that walkie thing, by the way. I think we talked about this afterwards. If you go into two-man teams, as you go in,
oh, yeah, we did.
Just one person really needs a walkie. It gets a little loud with a lot of feedback if two people are holding on to a walkie-talkie.
Yeah, that is a good point. And also, you know, another thing that you brought up during the investigation is we've had this happen before, but we just haven't used the walkies in so long. I think we forgot, but... We had a case where about midway through the investigation, we started hearing other chatter on the walkie-talkies. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, we're all in different rooms, so we sent out a note that or a message to change to a particular channel. And afterwards, you pointed out that, you know, if there's people that are out there kind of, you know, aware of us or messing with us or just being stupid, we might just want to have some sort of code or, you know, some predetermined, hey, if we need to change channel, go up to, you know, or three or whatever. And
exactly.
And, but it turned out okay. We didn't have it must have been somebody legitimate.
That time, I think it was the example you're talking about, I think, if I recall, was in the Saginaw area, and they were horsing around with us by talking through the walkie-talkies.
Yes,
so.
Exactly. Bastards.
Jerks.
Stupid, probably teenagers.
Or not. Unemployed people.
Wow.
I'm just saying.
Take it there,
baby. It was Saginaw. I'm just saying.
It was Essexville, near Saginaw.
Right.
But yeah. Anyway, so in this particular case, I started off womaning Command Central for the first session, and we split teams up. So typically we'll take a team at least of two, depending on what the makeup is and how many teams we have. But in this case, we had four people plus myself, so we took teams of two and two that split up. And then what we'll do normally is we'll... whether it's split teams or a single team, we'll run an EVP session. So in a particular room, we may have a stationary camera. In this case, we did not in all rooms, but we did in some rooms. And then we'd like to have a mobile camera, or at least one camera in the room, a recorder, possibly more depending on the size of the room, and then obviously EMF detectors, flashlights, What else we take? Walkies.
Miscellaneous. I
miscellaneous,
mean, that kind of breaks
Tums,
it down.
I
we don't go.
Tums
We don't go
pocket.
real. Our fly, the flashlight. We don't really go all
Lipstick.
That heavy. Lipstick.
Chapstick,
we do have
a little bit of a chapstick.
Deodorant,
junkie.
If necessary, but we don't usually go real, real heavy. Once the cameras are set up, we carry our personal stuff pretty light.
Right.
So.
Well, that's one thing that probably differs us from people on the TV shows because we do have day jobs and we have lives, and so do our team members. We're pretty cautious and more cautious each time about what equipment we have in a room. There have been times early on where we would find out we'd have three recorders in the same EVP session in a regular average sized room, and that's just too much.
No, yeah.
So we've tried really hard to make sure that we've got the critical areas covered and we've got the equipment that we need, but we don't over equipment, and that's something for the rookie people to consider that you don't. It's really, sometimes you get so excited and you're like, I want my recorder because it's my recorder and I'm going to take it home and listen to it. But sometimes you just have to be cognizant of, okay, but maybe it'd be better off if you just had one recorder and you guys share files.
Well, don't take any more equipment or evidence gathering equipment that you don't want to be responsible for monitoring afterwards,
right?
Because that takes a lot of time when you're reviewing however many files you want to do.
Right.
So
we go into our EVP sessions. I think we usually do them on the fly, although we have been known to bring in sets of questions. Sometimes we help out with some research for some paranormal groups, and if we have specific questions to the events that have been reported, but typically we're on the fly. And I would say normally we're in the 45-minute range per session. I think this is what we did last time. We did 45 minutes and then 15 minutes to regroup and set up. So
when Beth breaks out the snacks.
That's right. The snacks are always available. That's the most important part of the night. So we break. So we do the EVP session. We break. And then we regroup and make determinations of this is where we're going next. If we don't, in this case, I kind of had a preconceived plan a little bit. But we go reset our cameras, check batteries, check, how much is left on the SD cards or the Hi8 or whatever to make sure that we've got enough to cover, or swap them out. And then we all go off to the second session and kind of repeat the process until the end. So that's kind of pretty much it. I mean, it's usually pretty basic.
Yeah, there isn't a whole lot of variety in that time span. You basically rotate your shifts and redo it.
Now, I will say that there is variety when things go wrong, because that always happens.
That's inevitable.
Right? So you always have, to be wary of things like, equipment failure. A lot of times, batteries go dead, or we have some digital blue cameras and one of them's a little quirky, so it kind of goes on and off randomly by itself. You have to be aware of environmental changes or challenges too. Like one thing that we find a lot in residential homes, time after time, is how much you hear throughout the house, no matter where you are.
Yeah.
That houses just resonate.
Yeah. Well, we normally live our lives with TVs running, traffic going by, dogs barking, whatever. And once things are truly dark and quiet, voices carry.
Very true. And in this case, this was a ginormous house.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was huge. Very old, 170-year-old house. And it had two separate upstairs. One was, I think, like possibly a servant's quarters. And I thought, okay, this size of a house, we're golden, because we can have a team up in the attic. There was actually even a loft on top of the attic.
That's right.
And we could have a team in the basement. But I'll be damned if we didn't get through that recording and find that, and I could tell when I was sitting at Command Central on the main floor, I could hear both of the teams, and one of the teams very clearly.
Yeah.
And we found that we believed that when we were walking around, we could hear things, down in the rooms below that sounded like they were in that room, we suspect.
Well, and they're walking around up top. I agree with you, because we have timelines. Make sure as much as possible you try to do time stamping so that you can have correlatory timelines when you're reviewing evidence.
Very important.
But I think we're going to try to remind me, put it on my Christmas list. I want a vocabulary for Christmas.
Okay, got it.
We're going to try to not repeat the conditions, but emulate.
Oh, yeah, we're going to
we're gonna walk around upstairs and, right. and see if we can repeat some of the sounds we heard on our EVP.
Yes, we're gonna. We had some evidence where we heard footsteps, and based on listening to all of the audio, we think that the footsteps were from the team that was on the second floor. But I'll be darned, man, you listen to that the recorder that was on the main floor in the bedroom, and it sounded like something was moving around right in that room near the recorder. But it correlated exactly with the footsteps.
So we're going to try to recreate that and feel better about that all the way around to be sure. But the timeline certainly suggests that's the case.
So sometimes, some of the challenges that you'll face when you're doing a client investigation, at least in our experience, are, and we've talked about some of these before, one of the things is you'll arrive, and this happens in the interviews too, where the client has an entourage.
Right.
And for the interviews, you know, I kind of understand, you know, it's not really that big of a problem. And I certainly understand what people are either nervous or scared or excited, you know, they want to
they
spread
want the rubberneckers
right.
in there.
Exactly.
Well, that doesn't always have to be entirely bad, because on more than one occasion when they've had multiple people hanging out, if you're talking to the main client, we can kind of pick the brain. I can kind of pick the brains of others. And some things, I won't say always get debunked, but it's amazing how once you pull people away from the
right.
vibrating source, you start getting, well, you know, sometimes she thinks that happened, but. And
I remember that with one of our clients where there were some drums involved, and I remember we pulled the friend aside who we had been told had, you know, absolutely heard those too, and she mentioned something to the effect of, yeah, well, when I first heard it, I couldn't tell. I thought maybe it was like just a truck going by.
Right.
And so it was just a
revealing. Yeah, but people understandably get wrapped up in whatever the crowd's thinking.
Right.
So.
The problem is when we come for an investigation
and
the entourage is there, because typically, with the last case being the exception in recent years, but typically the client stays around, and it is very difficult to keep one person quiet. I mean, we've had clients go, you know, up a couple flights of stairs, and they said, no, we won't, you know, we're just going to sit there and read. I'm not going to do anything. And then we hear them talking.
Mm-hmm.
We've babysat people a lot, and it's just really, really difficult. And with the more people there are, obviously, the more difficult it is to have a clean investigation.
Wonderful break. The clients trusted us enough that they went off to see a movie, and
yeah,
we had the
awesome.
Whole place to ourselves. So,
and it was just it was an awesome house,
pristine,
too.
Great house in a pristine environment.
Yeah, exactly. You'll find that you'll arrive places sometimes, and you'll have pets that you were not aware of,
mm-hmm.
Or that you were aware of, and you thought that they wouldn't be there.
Right.
So, we actually had a little bit of a. It wasn't even a problem, but we were aware of our last clients having some small pets that they kept in one of their rooms, and we did have to be cognizant of when we would hear sounds in that direction to confirm that it was this small animal versus something paranormal. And then we've already talked about how, you know, you have a lot of some clients that are just really interested in, can you get rid of it for me?
Right.
And some teams absolutely embrace that and get into it and are great at it, and that's, you know, more power to them. I don't mean to suggest that because you're an investigator you can't do that, or you can't, you know, we do research, but it's not our strong point. You know, we do as much as we can if they want information about their ghosts. But that's the getting rid of it part, that's just not what we do.
Right, right. Well, and one thing that I think that's kind of interesting, too, and we've talked about this before, that Beth and I don't buy into the demon side of things. But what I think that we sometimes don't convey quite as well is we do have a pretty diversified group as far as spiritual beliefs within CPI. I mean, it ranges everything from atheists and agnostics all the way up to, you know, a couple that have studied to be a minister. So, you know, it's not that what happens is it's not that any of us as individuals wouldn't have a certain belief on spirituality. But what comes into play is because it's consistent with us trying to stay scientific and not try to say that we know exactly what you're dealing with, we just don't offer that. We don't say it's a demon. We don't subscribe to that for purposes of.
And I'll tell you what, that so far we've actually had a few clients that have been dead certain that they've had demonic activity, and our findings have been absolutely the opposite of that. That they're not. If they have demons, they're psychological demons, or they're not.
And
so far we have not. And what's what's kind of concerning to me is that there are some groups, not, you know, there are many, many reputable groups, and if you're looking for a group, you know, do a little research, but there are some groups that are really heavily into the demonic and doing exorcisms and deliverances, and they do these things on a regular basis. And that just blows my mind because we, you know, we have pretty regular clients and we just don't run into that kind of.
Well, my concern comes into what we have run into is exactly like you talked about, where maybe it's people who don't completely need help, but are kind of on the bubble, and maybe they're letting beliefs overrun critical thinking. And I'm more concerned that groups like that are going to do more damage.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to, in fact, you know, CPI has been criticized for sometimes getting on our high horse too much. So I'm not going to, you know, go down that road again. But I, you know, I don't judge if they're having success and getting clients. I guess that's what it's about. But I'm concerned if they feed into the clients.
I'm concerned about any group that is doing deliverances on a regular basis.
Well,
or doing
right,
exorcisms
yeah.
on a regular basis. But,
yeah.
you know, again, that's for the, you know, in that defense, on that note, we also have a lot of clients that have used or request psychics. And,
absolutely.
And although we have a sensitive, and we also have a friend who, you know, claims to be psychic, who we have worked with, you know, with some of these clients, us on the scientific side, we don't, you know, we're scientific investigators and I don't disbelieve in psychic phenomena, but it's not part of.
We don't hang our coat on it.
We don't hang our coat on it, right?
Yeah.
So there is definitely that aspect of it too.
You know, specific to this investigation, one thing I also wanted to bring up again, and we can't stress enough, and I messed up on this one, mostly because I think I pooped myself a little bit when it happened. And but I was setting up the DigiBlue up in that loft, and of course it was already kind of dark, and don't let anybody fool you. You know, you could still spook yourself even when you do this,
oh,
and
yeah.
I've done it myself.
A lot.
But I'm setting up my DigiBlue, just doing a straight shoot, and just a really crisp crinkle rattling sound that I just about leapt out of my Nikes. I almost lost the swoosh on
was
my
it
Nikes.
A mouse?
Now, as it turns out, because they're still working on the house, you know, it was basically an upstairs loft window was covered or with stapled down trash bags. And as the breeze had come in, it had, you know, created a ripple effect. But it was only, you know, 10 feet away from me or something like that. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I didn't, you know, I probably let out a little, oh, you know, I might have. I don't know. I blacked it out a little bit.
I think I smelled a little poo up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. And what I should have done was if I had burst out in screams or if that sound had been picked up, especially throughout the investigation, I should have made that notation that, and I might have done it somewhere, but I didn't at that time because I was rattled.
God. Sean,
I didn't run.
What's wrong with you?
Well, I didn't run and Kirk didn't see me. I composed myself before I came downstairs.
You know, you had other things going on. You had your manhood to, you know.
Exactly. I had to call my manhood back.
Your manliness. Well, that actually is a good segue into, you know, the post-investigation process, because we do, you know, we have the investigation, we have all these files now, and sometimes there are, in a 3-4-hour investigation, we could easily have 20 to 30 hours worth of footage and audio to go through. So we try to divvy that up as well as we can, and we get better at that every time. You know, sometimes we don't necessarily do it as efficiently as we want. But again, people have day jobs, so it takes a while. Usually we do 2 to 3 weeks for the client before we do a reveal, just because it takes that long to get through it and put together my anal retentive report.
Well, you put together a very beautiful report, but let's not forget, especially in this case, it's not just reviewed once. If we think we found something,
right.
It gets passed around.
Well, exactly. And that's exactly what I was getting to, is that we, you know, everybody goes through and they'll come up with, okay, at, you know, 2342, I saw a mist or whatever. And then what we do is we pass those around. Sometimes we get together. We did this time. A few of us got together. Or we just pass the files along and say, hey, can you look at these and have somebody else give it a second eye or even a third eye. And we end up debunking a lot of our own evidence.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In fact, in this case, we debunked quite a few of it, quite a bit of it. We initially thought we had some really compelling stuff,
yep.
And we may still, but there were a few pieces that we said,
well, again,
we figured it out.
A large part, one of them in particular, a large part was ultimately debunked because of the ability to rely on timelines.
That's very true. Very important for timelines.
We were able to correlate an event that happened with you with what we thought was evidence and say, yeah, you know what, that is what that was.
And I know we've had some discussions on this too, and it's my belief that the best way to correlate timelines is to do a time check so that everybody's device picks up that time check at the same time, so that when, you know, somebody radios in and says it's 9:15 time check, the audio in every room, you know, picks that up, and the video in every room picks that up, so that you know that, okay, at 9:15 equals this on my camera and I can go forward.
That's exactly it, because a perfect example is I know that I start in this particular investigation, I started out my recorder by saying, okay, EVP starting at 9 o'clock. And then as I'm listening, my EVP is counting up. So if I look at it counting up and it says 29:13, I know that it came at, well, roughly 9:29:13, and
right,
we can match it with everybody else's.
I mean, ultimately, you still have to scrutinize the particular clip, but it makes it a little bit easier to find things on, you know, other pieces of equipment, other devices, if you have some sort of a consistent time check. So we do go through the evidence review, we check it, recheck it, and we'll check it, and then we come up with a sometimes and sometimes not, anything that we found that was anomalous. If it's really compelling, you know, we'll present it as really compelling. If it's, we can't explain it, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's not paranormal, that's how we present it. And then we have the reveal, which is pretty similar to what you'd see on like a TAPS, the
sure,
ghost hunters.
Yep. And what I think people have to realize, and you know, on this last one that we had, our reveal is coming up, but we haven't done it yet. You know, ghosts aren't going to perform on command.
Right.
And so,
unfortunately,
if you've got a really, fuckers, you know.
Oh, now we took it to the adult one. Use the F word.
Time to mark that one explicit.
Crackers.
It's nice if you've got clients that might be really interested in it and might be willing to let you come back, because just because you didn't pick something up on that night, you know, that's one night out of 365,
right,
and that's one time frame out of 24 hours. So, you know, it's all about random sampling. Maybe you'll be able to get in there again or another time, and you might. So don't think that every time just because you didn't get something, you can't necessarily say it's not haunted, but you might want to tell your client, on this given night, if you'd like,
right,
us to come back, we'd be willing,
absolutely,
to, blah, blah, blah.
Now, one interesting thing is that, you know, we are absolutely a scientific investigation team, and that's what we, you know, promote and stress and focus on. And typically, even though we do consult Becky and talk about some of the things that she may have picked up, we don't really, and we'll include, you know, personal experiences, whatever they are, whether it's the sensory or something touched me or I, you know, I felt a web on my face, whatever. So we'll include that kind of stuff in the report, but it would take a lot, something really, really, really super compelling for me to present any sort of sensing type of, you know, psychic type of activity as possible evidence of a haunting. But I would say in the last case, she so nailed it on the head without having any information.
Well, she nailed what the client reported, right?
Right. What, exactly.
Yeah.
Now that, you're right, that does not necessarily, Becky picked up on what the client told us. Without knowing that the client reported it, knowing the story, she nailed it on the head. She got it very specific. So to me, that is, even though, regardless of what we get for physical evidence, that is, to me, is compelling. Now, is it evidence?
Sure.
No. But it is very, it's striking to me that she got so close.
You want to knock my socks off. When you really want to hit it one out of the ballpark, and I can't come up with another metaphor, so I'll just go right into it.
Sure.
If a psychic were able to hit on actual events that could be easily documented,
That'd be like the next.
That's the next level.
That's just like
it's very cool that she caught
the
without
nirvana
being
of,
exactly. It's very cool that she caught something without being coached that the client reported. Interesting correlation. But you want to really knock my socks off there. I found another metaphor. Give a description of a residence, and then we later find a black and white picture of the residence. That's where you start going, well, maybe
right,
this
to
is
me, to
evidence.
Me, that's on par with getting a full body apparition. What happened this last week to me is on par with getting a really clear but still not 100% EVP.
Sure.
So,
yep.
So that's pretty much it. We provide a report to the client, and we provide clips of our any evidence that we find.
And it just hit me, something
what?
We want to talk about, because we hand over all of our evidence. Well, all of our recordings.
Copies of, yes,
exactly.
Typically, except for in this case, we may not be able to do that.
So what you want to be careful of, and I've been guilty of it, but
here
what we've been finding is be careful what you're discussing about the client and your beliefs on the investigation. We have recorders everywhere, and it's perfectly understandable if you're with your teammate and you're saying, well, you know, they reported this, but I really think it's this because of this. You know what? The client doesn't need to hear. The client has their beliefs. We're reporting facts. And you don't want to give your client a belief that you're being sanctimonious or, you know, making disrespectful of them by recording, you know, by accidentally picking up your observations.
Right.
You know, I think anybody who isn't aware that isn't paying attention to the recorders going on, it's part of normal conversation. Just try to be aware of it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I agree. You know, there's nothing wrong with, you know, disputing claims, but just do it in a respectful way and not in a way that's like, you know, oh, I can't believe that they said that this is happening. This is so obvious. That's
right.
What you do later.
You sure. Do it over beers.
Over
and
beers,
a cigar.
Yeah, when you're reviewing
yes,
the evidence.
Exactly, but not because
we never do that. You do that in a podcast, actually. That's
podcast is when you got to do it. But seeing we hand over, you know, copies of everything that we collect.
Now, if you don't do that, then, you know,
no
hey,
problem.
Have at
not
it.
Not an issue.
Have at it. So that's about it. That's pretty much wraps it up, right? When we, as far as the investigation goes, we hand it over. And then in most cases, that's it. We've touched base with some of them before. Some of them we've become friends with,
yep.
our clients. But
yep.
That's pretty much it. So, you know, I just like to talk about stuff. So what do you, you got any, like, you know, random observations?
Yeah, I got to know how did pajama jeans even make the market?
I don't know. They're kind of...
I don't get it. I mean, they're
either.
Silly. I made fun of them on my Facebook site.
They look comfortable, though.
I made fun of them on my Facebook site. And what irritates me, and this is how America has become. Now you see them in their little package, and up in the corner it says, as seen on TV. As if that's the ultimate endorsement. If it's on TV, by God, it's got to be good.
Right.
So anyway, that's...
I don't know. I mean, they're a phenomenon all on their own. Speaking of jeans, I have an interesting anecdote to share about jeans and how jeans appear. Now, I was not wearing pajama jeans.
Right.
But as you know, we have our friend Dwayne, who is
mm-hmm.
A very stylish person.
Sure.
Well, back in the day before I met, you know, my wonderful husband here, Sean.
Right.
I was a single gal, you know, I was doing the online dating thing, and I don't remember what we were doing, or maybe I was heading out to a date, and Dwayne was over at my house, and I put on a pair of jeans, and I can only describe these jeans as probably they were a little baggy in the hips and a little tight in the ankles. And Dwayne just took look one at me, and he made his hands in kind of this, he just kind of put his hand under his chin, and he said, and he points at me, and he said, now, are you going out in public in that? And I said, yeah, why? And he said, well, you kind of have a triangle shape, a reverse triangle shape. And he
sure.
kind of made the motion with his hand. So
he's brutal sometimes.
He is brutal, but it's good. I'm glad I have him, because otherwise I would probably walk out of the house.
And you pull it off.
Looking
though.
Like, I would probably have pajama jeans.
Well, you pull it off. You've got pretty people features, so you would have pulled it off.
Thank you, sweetie. So I've got a couple of pet peeves. Now, you know, most of my random thoughts always come back to either poop,
ding, 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 ding,
or shopping, going through the U-scans, right? So I have both today. So the one is, you know, I'm in the bathroom the other day, and, you know, as I've already mentioned, I've had some intestinal distress.
Right.
And some of that intestinal distress has manifested in the way of raging diarrhea.
Sure.
At times. Okay. And, you know, when you have raging diarrhea, as you have called it before, it sounds like a Civil War battle.
Absolutely.
So I go into the women's bathroom at work, which has 5 stalls. There's nobody in the stalls, but there are 2 women having a conversation at the sink.
Mm-hmm.
This is my frickin' pet peeve about bathrooms, because, first of all, it's bad enough when you're in a stall and people come in and have a conversation. And I'm not talking about, hey, how you doing, and then I'm moving on
right.
to doing my business. I'm talking about I'm having a full-on conversation about something. It's bad enough when you're in the stall and this happens. The worst, even worse than that, is when you walk in and they know it's you. Then you have to go into the bathroom and either hold it
as best you can,
or let it out so that it doesn't make any noise. Or if you can't prevent that, then they know it's you that's going through the...
Completely takes your dignity away.
It's completely just shaming and humbling.
Yep.
So I just...
That's why I don't use public bathrooms, by the way.
See, I do all the time. I probably use the bathroom 10 times a day at work.
That's amazing.
And it's just... Now, if I'm going pee, I don't really care.
Right.
So my other thing is, you know, I think I've talked about the coupons before, about getting behind people that have, like, a stack of coupons. And they're using the U-Scan, and they've always got a ton of children, and it just should be against the law. Well, what also should be against the law is... Those old guys that have, you know, you ever seen those little change discs that you squeeze them?
Oh, absolutely.
But that your grandpa probably had one.
He did. He gave me one.
Absolutely. So people that have those, or the old ladies with the change purses who sit in front of you or standing in front of you in the cashier, whatever cashier it may be, and they're counting out their exact change.
Yep.
That annoys the shit out of me. And I know there's no reason for it. It's kind of like when my mom was around and sometimes she would just annoy me by her presence. It just annoys me. Just, there's a line. You know, they're counting out the pennies. Just give them a buck and put it in a jar like the rest of us.
Yeah. How about the jokers that when you're late for work at the party store and all you want is your rip it and your bag of nuts, but they're buying their lottery tickets, scraping them off,
and then
winning, cashing them in.
That fucking drives me crazy.
Yep.
That's insane.
That was a free one. That's no charge to our listeners.
Sweet.
I threw that in.
That
there.
Is just awesome. That's a great one.
Thank you.
Because that is very annoying. And, you know, they usually don't win anyway, so they just got to...
Why do I have a feeling that two of our three listeners are probably prone to doing all this, and we just lost two listeners? Yeah. But anyway, that's what I go.
We love them anyway.
Yeah.
So. All right. Anything else you want to talk about?
No.
No.
I think
you don't, because it's a sunny day out, and you want to get out on the deck and just chill out.
Listen to a podcast, maybe read my Nook. I don't know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Light right. One up.
So I think we're going to head out now. We thank everybody for listening once again. If you'd like to get in touch with us, we would really love to hear some feedback. You can get in touch with us on Facebook. Just look up Camp Bell Paranormal Investigations. You can email us direct at campbellpi2005@yahoo.com or go to our website, www.campbellpi.org. Thanks for listening.
Look forward to talking to you later. Bye.
This concludes episode 14 of the Go Dark podcast. Episode 14, titled The Investigation Process, was recorded in Jackson, Michigan on May 19th, 2011.